Totally 80s.
So now I'm obsessed with time. Come on, tell me about the time. Had it all in my head tonight. Had the time of my life. When the words all come down like
time.
Recorded in front of a studio audience of two dogs.
No, we're not. That's the stupidest thing I ever heard.
Recorded in a living room in anywhere USA in front of two dogs.
No. Welcome to another episode of American Timelines. I'm Amy.
And I am the strongest man in the world.
No, you're Joe.
I'm Joe.
And
I hold the record for most spaghetti eaten in a single minute.
Okay. This is a podcast where we discuss pop culture and true crime and all the crazy things that happen in a given year.
Sometimes we discuss salad.
Maybe, sometimes.
Or pro wrestlers.
Yeah, like, I guess we probably have discussed salad maybe once or twice.
We've mentioned salad. Jim Hellwig was the Ultimate Warrior. Sometimes we mention him. He's dead.
Yes. So, what year are we talking about?
Well, we are in the middle of season two, the 80s series.
Yes.
So.
Not quite the middle.
We're not quite the middle. We're in. We're pretty. We're deep in. We're deep and knee deep in. So we're up to episode four.
Okay.
Of the second season. So total.
This is like episode too 14. Much math.
No, wait.
All right.
Episode four, 1983. So. Episode 14 total. This is our 14th time doing this.
Really?
Okay. Our 14th episode. And they say a podcast only survives if it gets at least to 25 episodes.
That's something you made up.
No, that's actually a thing somebody told me. I don't know if the person knew what they're talking
about.
They
made it up, probably.
You know who I think said that?
Who?
Ryan Burkett is my guess. Ryan Burkett is a lovely
You're making that up, and you're slandering him,
no,
right
he's
now.
He's a very small fellow with several sleeping disorders, and he lives in Chicago. And he writes comedy, and he does improv.
Yes.
He's got a group called Joe. He's got a comedy group called Joe, named after probably after me.
I think it is after you, in fact.
Because they all have pictures of my torso.
That's right. Okay,
but
so.
But anyway, I think he told me that. So I don't know whether he's a genius or not, but I think he told me that.
All right.
So let's go ahead. You want to just dive right into 1980?
Yeah, let's dive right in.
Do we need to explain anything else? Any corrections? No. There hasn't been a lot of corrections and apologies.
I know. We've been
pretty
on it with the facts.
Well, I think that's the thing is. If you actually do a little bit of research, you actually kind of are
know
speaking.
A little more. Yeah, I mean, we still, I'm sure, are going to say things that are complete lies.
Yeah.
But not intentionally.
There were probably some apologies about Star Trek, The Wrath of Khan or something. We probably said some of those wrong, but I tried
people to edit. With the last name Smith, you should probably apologize to them.
That was a few episodes ago,
I think.
Yeah, I don't know.
Never apologize to them.
Well, I mean, you want to play a little game of name how many Smiths you know?
No, we're not doing that.
Oh, we're not?
No.
Okay. I thought that, well, that'll be our other podcast, our Smith.
I thought you meant we're not doing that. It's going to be our other podcast.
We're not doing that. I'll just suggest things and you say we're not doing that. And I'll suggest something else and then say we're not doing that.
That's right.
Okay.
All right. So.
Okay, let's just jump right into Saturday.
Okay.
January 1st was on a Saturday.
Okay.
This time I have the days of the week, too. So it's Saturday.
Oh, God.
The year started on a Saturday.
It's so unnecessary.
Saturday, January 1st, 1983.
Yep.
There was a game invented. And actually, I don't know if it was exactly on the 1st.
Okay.
So this one I just put the 1st. I know it was in January of 1983.
Nobody cares. What was it?
And I do have a few things at the end of this episode that I don't have dates for. I'm just going to mention it happened in 1983. So this, Jenga. The game Jenga was introduced at the London Toy Fair in January of 1983. Jenga.
Yeah. I love Jenga.
Do you do?
Yeah, we have one.
Does it surprise you at all that it's that old?
Maybe a little bit.
Yeah, I feel like it was more of a
90s.
2000s or 90s
in the
thing.
90s,
yeah,
I 90s
think. Thing.
But nope.
It was introduced at the London Toy Fair, and it was, I don't have the exact words written down, but it was invented by some family who... Just the
family of Amish?
No, I don't think.
Because it's just a wooden. It's just wooden blocks.
Yeah, there was a family like they made it up in their family and they started playing it. They were like, "Oh, let's take these wooden."
They're billionaires now.
I don't think it was twigs. It was some. They had them laying around for something. The blocks.
They're playing dildos.
Or something else. They were maybe.
I think they're dildos.
They probably were dildos.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, they were probably a family that loved dildos.
Dildo Jenga, honey.
Dildo Jenga is not a bad idea.
That's a marketable.
I mean,
idea.
Let's just quit the podcast and start. selling dildo
jenga. Dildo jenga. Okay.
There's probably a porn out there where they do that already.
Yeah, there probably is. All right, what's...
Moving on to Saturday, January 15th. That's 2 weeks after that original Saturday.
Yeah.
There was a new number one song on the top of the charts because whatever was at the end of 82 carried over.
Okay.
And I have forgotten what it was. Do you remember?
What?
Do you remember what was at the end of 82, what the top song
was?
Oh,
I thought you were asking me, do I remember what song you're getting ready to talk about?
No, what I'm saying, January 15th, 1983, a new song took over the top Billboard charts.
No, I do not remember.
And it was whatever was at the end of the last episode.
Yeah, I don't know.
Anyway, Men at Work took over with their single Down Under.
I come from the land down under.
Can you hear that thunder?
Men go
thunder. The song also contains the refrain, where beer does flow when men chunder.
So?
Do you know what chunder means?
No. What does it mean?
Beer does flow and men chunder.
I said I don't know what it means.
What do you think? By me saying that, vomit.
They vomit.
They vomit.
Okay.
Yeah, chunder means to vomit. I never paid attention to much of the words except the part where they say Vegemite sandwich.
They're all in that Australian slang stuff.
It is a whole bunch of Australian slang.
It's a whole other language.
It is kind of. It's basically just about a guy who wanders around from Australia and everybody's all... references to him. But did you know that Men at Work were sued?
No.
By a music royalty company who had owned the rights to Kookaburra. Remember that Kookaburra nursery rhyme?
No.
Kookaburra sits in an old oak tree.
You made that up.
No, I swear.
I've never heard that.
You've never heard of that?
No.
Kookaburra sits in an old oak tree.
No.
Sabadabadip and jolly folly something is.
No, I haven't heard of it. The more you say it, it's not going to change the fact that I know.
You've never heard of Kookaburra.
No, I have not.
All right, anyway, it's a famous nursery rhyme, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Like written in the 1890s or 1900s or something. But anyway, why somebody had the rights to it, whatever. But anyway, they were sued.
You think that would be public domain by now?
Well, they were sued because they didn't realize this till it was a trivia question on some show that it was like, what popular hit song uses the same...
Nursery rhyme tune.
The music from the, and the answer was that song Down Under by Men at Work.
So it was like on Jeopardy or something?
Jeopardy. It was some Australian show.
Oh.
Something like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire type. Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
All right. What's next?
And so then they got sued, and that court case went on forever.
Oh.
And Colin Hay, the guy from Men at Work,
the one with the floaty eye?
I don't notice.
He does. He's got floaty eyes.
You think everyone has a floaty eye.
I think this is the same conversation. He's the same person.
Are we talking about it? I didn't know he had a floaty eye. But anyway, the lead singer, the bald guy who sings the song.
He's got a floaty eye.
Anyway, his dad died and one of the guitarists or something died prematurely and he blamed
because
it on
this
lawsuit.
Because of this lawsuit?
And it went on forever. Like It didn't get settled till the 2000s or 2011 or something. Anyway, that's crazy.
Yep, that's dumb.
Sunday, January 23rd, 1983. There was a pilot episode of maybe, arguably, the greatest television show in history.
In 83?
Yeah, pilot
episode. Can't say Cosby Show anymore because boom.
I never would have said that anyway.
Yeah, I wouldn't have either.
The only good episode of Cosby Show is when Vanessa loses her Bobby Brown tape and she put it in the freezer and she accuses everybody else of
stealing. Oh.
Or the one where Theo has to make a sweater. And it's got like three arms.
Oh, see.
Maybe Denise made the sweater on Theo.
I don't remember one episode of Cosby Show.
Theo was
not even one. All right, I don't
Malcolm
know.
Malcolm Jamal Warner.
Okay, let's get back to it. Okay,
back to this. This TV pilot was
on
Sunday,
January 20th.
And you think
it's one of the best
probably
shows.
The greatest show.
Cheers?
No. Oh. No, but on this pilot episode, Ron Palillo appeared as a guest.
Okay.
On the pilot episode. You know who Ron Palillo is?
No.
He played Horchak.
Oh, yeah,
Welcome Back, Kotter.
Yep.
Oh, Mr. Kotter.
So anyway,
he was on that. But this it was the pilot episode of The A-Team.
Oh.
Yeah.
I should have known that was your greatest show.
Yeah,
pick.
And that episode title was called Mexican Sleigh Ride. The A-Team is hired by Amy Allen to rescue a missing foreign correspondent in Mexico.
Okay.
And they're all like, Mr. T was on it. And what were you going to say? You're going to have a question?
Was the A-Team, I had a stupid question.
Are you not sure what it is?
I was gonna ask, did the cereal come first of the show?
So in your mind, there's a possibility that there was a cereal and they said, hey, let's make a TV show based on the cereal. We'll make the A-Team cereal and then we'll make the Lucky Charms.
You never know.
They've made movies and
shows out of stupider things than that.
I don't know. That could be the dumbest thing you've ever said in your life. And there wasn't an A-Team cereal. There was a Mr. T cereal. And that was based on the Mr. T show.
You're making me cry.
No, I just, I think, I mean, I've always thought you were kind of intelligent, but that's the dumbest thing anybody's ever said.
All right.
So we can't come back from that.
We can't. Let's just move on to the next thing.
What came first, the CEO or the show? What? Oh, my God. You know how many people are going to unsubscribe immediately from a podcast after hearing that? Oh, my goodness.
Stop. Stop. All right.
Sunday, the next Sunday, a week later, Sunday, January 30th, 1983, was the Super Bowl.
Okay.
And in that Super Bowl, the Redskins beat the Dolphins 27-17. John Riggins was the MVP. He's a running back.
Riggins from, what's that show? Friday Night Lights?
No, not that Riggins.
Okay.
But maybe, perhaps on the show, he's a...
Maybe he's named after this dude. Related.
Probably is. Anyway, that season, a 57-day-long player strike reduced the regular season from a 16-game schedule to a 9-game schedule.
Nobody cares about any of that
The Cleveland Browns and Detroit Lions qualified for the playoffs despite 4-5 records, the only sub-500 teams to reach the NFL playoffs until the 7-9 Seattle Seahawks reached the playoffs following the 2010 season. Browns and Lions are known to be terrible forever. So anyway,
that's all there is to it.
I wrote down who
won?
No, I said who won at the beginning, but I didn't write down who sang the national anthem.
Oh, that's fine.
Oh, no. We'll never know. We might never know.
That's all right.
Let's just say it was Barbara
Mandrell.
Gallen.
Barbara Mandrell was around. It could have been her.
It was definitely Barbara Mandrell.
Let's just say, nobody's going to know. So let's just say the official national anthem was sung by Barbara Mandrell that year.
Every Super Bowl in the 80s, or from 1979 through 83, Barbara Mandrell sang
that's
the national
right.
anthem.
That's right. Now we're done with that segment for all of the 80s.
Anyway, do you want to guess how much a Super Bowl ad was? This was Super Bowl 17.
$370,000.
You're not far off.
Oh, what was it?
You're actually not far off. It's a completely even number.
Okay.
$400,000.
Oh, that's close.
$400K. So you remember this for next week when we record it.
I always remember it.
You know, sometimes you don't.
I'm always really close.
No.
I've never been more than $10 off.
That's actually not a true statement right
well,
now.
I've never,
right now you're lying.
I've never been more than a little bit off. Is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, you've actually been way off.
Except for the one we had to jump back to the 80s.
Ooh, you have been way off. Callers, please call in.
No. All right, what's
okay,
next?
Okay, now we have something that you apparently are going to cover.
Oh,
this
it's just a little
decided,
short.
Amy's going to help me with some of the research because I'm a busy man and she just sits on her...
No, that's not true. I have a job.
Oh, yeah, I have a job. You're a career woman.
So you're talking about February 4th?
Friday, February 4th, 1983 is the next thing that happened.
The lead singer of the Carpenters, Karen Carpenter, died on February 4th, 1983 of heart failure related to her years-long struggle with anorexia.
Oh, no, really?
Yes, she was the first. She brought anorexia out into...
She bought?
Brought it out brought into it? The public consciousness.
Really?
Before
she was
that,
like the first one to...
Yeah, and before that, nobody really knew what it was, and she got so thin that people were just like she had to cancel tours. She would have to sleep for like 16 hours a day.
Well, it seemed like the 80s skinny was so in. Like everybody wanted to be skinny, and
the 70s was more like skinny.
It was more like that.
The 80s was kind of the opposite.
More heavy.
But she was probably, I mean,
the Carpenters sing just like me.
Yes,
they long
yes.
to be close to you.
They sing that. They sing
anything
rainy
else?
Days and Mondays always get me down.
And it was just a guy and a girl in the group, right? Or was it a whole group?
I think it was just the guy and the girl. I don't know.
Karen Carpenter but Jim Carpenter?
No, I don't remember his name.
Dave Carpenter.
I always remember just Karen Carpenter because I know that she died of that.
Huh. I didn't realize that was she died of. That's what she died of.
Yeah, she got so skinny she was like a skeleton.
Huh. That's sad.
Yeah. That's sad.
Well, let's just end the podcast because I'm too sad.
All right, what's next?
Saturday, the very next day after Karen Carpenter died, there's a new number one song. I think the world was ready to just reset. They're like, Karen Carpenter's gone. Let's just get Men at Work out of here and let's have a new number one Billboard song. That day, everybody woke up to Toto having the number one song called Africa.
I felt the rains down in Africa. That's an awful song.
It's a great song. Are you kidding?
I think it's pretty bad.
Think of love is happening away from me. I bless the rains down in Africa.
I think it's
Africa.
Awful. All right.
I love that song. That's a great song. And if you've ever heard Mike Leshinsky sing it, you'll love it.
Oh, I think I did.
Mike Leshinsky is a former college friend of ours who ended up becoming a bishop. I don't know.
I think he was a priest.
Anyway, he could sing and he could get the high notes and he would sing Africa. Gonna take a lot to take me away from you.
All right.
Anyway, it's a great song. But the song is about a person flying in to meet a lonely missionary. As a child, the guy who wrote it attended a Catholic school, and several of the teachers had done missionary work in Africa. And this became the inspiration behind the line, "I bless the rains down in Africa."
Is that what he's saying?
Africa.
I never knew what he said in the second.
I bless the rains.
I felt the rains?
No,
or bless. That's what I always thought
they
it was.
I bless the rains. Because they're singing about a missionary who's a missionary in Africa. Who's lonely.
It.
And then their significant other, I think, comes to visit them finally. And hurry, boy, she's waiting there for you.
All right.
And he's like going to see her.
This is far too long of a time to talk about this one song.
It's such a great song. I mean,
no, it's not that good.
I can't listen to it without, you know.
I'm not even good at it. All right.
I take off my shirt, my Prius.
Yes. Okay, we've established that.
I mean, that's how you know a song's good. And then the next day, on Sunday, February 6th, on television, again, Ron Palillo.
Yes.
Maybe the greatest actor in American
this
history.
This is very, very accurate
Ron
statement.
Palillo, who played Horshack, he also guest starred on another show. Just 1 month after The A-Team, he guest starred on a Chips episode.
Chips.
It was, and the name of the episode was Journey to a Spacecraft.
Oh, God.
Ponch befriends a young aerospace enthusiast who has a life-threatening liver disease.
I bet she's hot.
And who embarks on a dangerous journey to meet his astronaut hero. It's a he. Based, obviously, who are you going to get to play a young aerospace enthusiast who has a life-threatening liver disease?
In the 80s.
Ron Palillo.
Oh,
of
course.
Horshack. We got to get that Mr.
Gotta get him.
Guy. You got to get him. Anyway, that show was on. Chips.
All right.
And then Saturday, February 19th, we got a new number one song. Toto has been overthrown by Patty Austin and James Ingram. February 19th, 1983. You know what song?
Is it Up Where We Belong or something like that.
Baby, come to me.
Oh, God, that's terrible music.
My arms around you.
I didn't know that was a duet.
It was. It was Patty Austin and James Ingram. And if you want to see a ridiculous 80s video, look up that video.
Oh, my God.
It's
awful.
It's really terrible. They're just standing there singing on a stage somewhere.
I don't think I could listen to that song long enough to watch a video of it.
Here's what demonstrates also how horrible that song actually is. That song actually was released in 82, and it didn't even get anywhere near the top of the charts. But a television show latched onto it and played it all the time. And because of the fans, the rabid fans loving that song.
You don't know what television show?
I do know, and I'm about to tell you. I wanted to see if you wanted to guess what television show would have that terrible music in it.
God. I Love Boat?
It actually became a romantic theme song for one of the characters.
It wasn't the Love Boat?
The character's name is Luke Spencer. You know who that is?
Oh, it was General Hospital, right?
General Hospital. So fans of General Hospital loved that so much because anytime Luke and Laura were banging, they baby come.
Oh, they did.
Me. And Luke, I mean, that guy looked like
a toad.
Yeah, curly hair. Like
it was awful.
He looked like
like the greatest American hero.
Yeah,
he did.
Except an older version, an older balding version of the greatest American hero. I was thinking Howie Mandel with blonde hair or something. Yeah. Or like, I don't know. Anyway,
it was pretty bam.
Anytime he made out with Laura, they played that song. And so the fans loved it so much. They got so many inquiries that the Warner Brothers decided to re-release it. And it went to number one because of General Hospital. That terrible show. My aunt loved General Hospital. She would always tape it with a VCR.
My mom loved it. Well, we talked about this. My mom and The Young and the Restless was her big one.
Yeah, that was hers. And my mom was Days of Our Lives. But
that's so funny.
That's crazy that there was that many soap operas. I can't believe. But anyway, that terrible song is directly because of stupid, crappy General Hospital.
So funny.
I remember coming home from school, and there was some show I couldn't wait to come on, and we had to wait till
General Hospital was over.
Because it was on at 4.
Yeah, right.
At our time. So whatever it was, it was 5 o'clock, and I can't remember what it was on. What it was. There was some show.
Yeah.
Like, God, hurry up, General Hospital. And I didn't want to even see a second of General Hospital. I wanted it to immediately
be over.
I can't remember what show it was, but it was like G.I. Joe or Transformers or something.
It was one of those, yeah.
Monday, February 21st, 1983. Cagney and Lacey was on television.
Oh, you've been waiting to talk to them about those gals.
I really was. And in this particular episode, a date rape investigation divides Chris, who feels the victim brought it on herself, and Mary Beth, who doesn't believe that philosophy. Chris feels honored also for the girls to be let in on the male officer's practical jokes.
Now, they were they supposed to be lesbian lovers? Because that's how it came across.
No.
That's how it kind of came
across. No, I think they were both married to dudes.
I know, but like if you think about it.
Back then, you weren't allowed to talk about being a lesbian.
I know, but was it like thinly veiled shout out kind of thing?
I don't know. I never once watched it.
Yeah, I don't know if I even did. Maybe once.
I wish I regret not watching it.
I know, now you do.
It's my kitsch go-to reference.
Yes, it is.
Cagney and Lacey, everyone.
Our children know who Cagney and Lacey are because of that.
Cagney and Lacey. They learned that show before they learned a lot of other things.
Important life lessons.
Yeah, before my daughter could name all the colors, she could name Cagney and Lacey.
Tyne Daly.
Tyne Daly.
Yeah.
Sharon Gless or Tyne Daly, I would make her pick. Wednesday, February 23rd, 1983, the Grammy Awards were hosted by Ray Charles and Jerry Lee Lewis.
Oh, that's a pretty bang-up thing there.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I mean, those two together, that's pretty good. I can't imagine what that's like. The Album of the Year went to Toto for Toto 4,
mm-hmm.
and Song of the Year was Always on My Mind.
Oh, you were always on Willie Nelson.
Willie Nelson. You know, that's not the first version of that song.
No,
that's
I know.
A redo. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I thought it was originally his. But anyway, those are the big winners.
Very good.
Anything else to say about that?
Nope.
Monday, February 28th, 1983, on television was a very big deal. Now, I know I've mentioned some just random television shows. This was a huge deal.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, New York's sewer system experienced a 6.7 million gallon hike after the series finale of MASH.
Oh my God. Were people barfing or having diarrhea?
An estimated 1 million citizens held it in until the ending.
Oh.
That the series finale of MASH.
I thought it was because people were barfing.
No, the series finale of MASH was watched by 125 million people. Some of those people were probably barfing.
Or having massive diarrhea.
But that many people watched. MASH was such a big deal. The U.S. population that year was approximately 203 million.
Yeah.
So only 75 million out of 203 were not watching MASH.
Oh, my God. That's insane.
As of 2017, of the top 20 most watched TV broadcasts in the United States,
mm-hmm.
19 were Super Bowls, and the other was the MASH. 1983 finale of the television MASH.
I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah, it was a big fucking deal.
I remember my grandma watched MASH. She loved MASH.
Yeah. Yeah,
I always would get, I don't know, my mom a lot of times.
Everybody loved it.
Yeah, my mom would go out and a lot of times MASH was coming on, she'd go out with my dad.
Yeah.
And I would get that awful feeling in the pit of my stomach. And
MASH was on?
No, because she was leaving.
Oh, yeah.
And I equated the theme song to that feeling, so it kind of creeps me out a little bit.
Yeah. I always got a creepy feeling about MASH, too. I don't know why. I think
the war.
Yeah, I don't know. Just
stuff
like
about wars.
I didn't care anything depressing. About it at all. But MASH is also the only reason anybody who's not from Toledo, Ohio
knows
Toledo, Ohio.
Yeah, I know.
Everyone knows from Klinger, which I never watched MASH.
Yeah,
I should go back and watch it and see because
I watched a lot of it.
You did? Because apparently
my grandma
he
did.
Talked about the Toledo Mud Hens a lot.
Yeah, he did.
And he talked about Tony Paco's hot dogs.
Yes, he does.
Which Tony Paco is a big deal. I mean, you know that from living near there. But,
right.
So it always blows my mind that complete strangers, when they hear I'm from Toledo, are like, oh, Tony Paco's. I was like, how the hell do you know that? The Mud Hens, the Mud Hens.
Well, Tony Paco's, my God, they must have been in heaven when that was going on.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the only reason they're a big deal. I mean, if he didn't talk about that, I'm sure they would have
died out,
been out
probably.
Of business.
Yeah, that's true.
They're a big deal. I mean, it's not that great. It's just chili sauce. I mean, it's just
chili. I've never had it, so.
It's just. It's like, you know, if you have a chili dog.
Yeah, that's all it is.
Yeah, it's Hungarian hot dog with chili sauce on it.
Oh.
But they sell their Paco sauce, which is just, it's good, but it tastes like any chili sauce to me.
Oh,
I mean,
really?
Any chili dog I've ever had tastes like Paco's.
I'm not a big chili dog fan.
Yeah, well, and I don't like the Hungarian hot dogs. It's like kielbasa.
It does.
You know, and then the thing about Tony Paco's is they, celebrities go there because that's
so they have all the names on or the pictures.
They sign hot dog buns.
Oh, they sign hot dog buns,
and then they encase them in something. They shellac them and encase them in something. And hang them on the wall. Now, Burt Reynolds was the first one to actually do that.
Oh, really?
And he signed up when he was on Playgirl magazine.
Oh my God!
And he signed up a centerfold of him. They covered up his wiener with a hot dog bun, and he signed it. That was like the original one, and then now they have a bunch.
So somebody, how did he carry around pictures of himself in Playgirl magazine or just
probably?
I've got. I happen to have a picture of myself. If you
I'm
want,
I'm sure he did. We're talking about Burt Reynolds.
I know that's
so
true.
Probably. Anyway, how do we get to Burt Reynolds naked? But Tony Pacos, yep. Klinger, and Klinger was trying to get kicked out of the
army. by dressing like a woman,
which yeah. there's probably like a lot of transphobic.
Yeah, it could be.
Now, so maybe it won't hold up. But
yeah,
I always had a problem with Houlihan, Hot Lips Houlihan.
Oh yeah,
I don't know why she just bothered me.
Yeah,
I don't know why. Anyway, that happened on Monday, February 28th, 1983, and then on Thursday, March 3rd, just that same week, you have something.
Oh yeah, Rockstar.
Oh, I just opened my last Hot Slam.
Rockstar Dave Navarro's mother was murdered in 1983. Navarro appeared on America's Most Wanted, and thanks to a viewer tip, the killer was caught. So when Dave was seven, his parents divorced, and he moved to Bel Air with his mother, Constance.
Wow.
He designated days he would spend with his father per their custody arrangement. Things changed dramatically for 15-year-old Dave on March 3rd while he was staying at his father's house. His mother and a close friend were murdered in her West Los Angeles apartment by her jealous, psychotic ex-boyfriend, John Riccardi.
Oh, man.
He broke into her apartment, shot her and her friend, and stuffed her lifeless body halfway into a linen closet.
Huh.
So prosecutors claimed that Riccardi had once handcuffed then 13-year-old Dave to a toilet and stalked Connie constantly. Dave believes he would have been Riccardi's third victim if he had been there that night, which
I'm
it
sure
sounds
he
should have.
Oh,
yeah,
definitely would have been.
Totally would have, yeah.
So, and Dave Navarro was from
Foo Fighters, right?
No.
I'm thinking of Dave Grohl.
Dave Grohl. Navarro was one of the Chili Peppers? No.
No.
Dave Navarro. He was a big band. There was a big...
Yeah, I know. I can't think of it right now.
I think it's...
Oh, I know. Jane's Addiction. That's what it was.
Jane's Addiction?
Yeah, he was in Jane's Addiction.
No.
Yes, he was. Now
Red Hot Chili Peppers.
I think he was in Jane's Addiction, too.
No, no.
Yes, I guarantee he was.
He was... Jane's Addiction, you're right. Oh, my God,
you're
right.
I accept your apology.
Been caught stealing.
Yeah.
Once when I was... I didn't know he was in Jane's Addiction.
Yeah.
So 86 to 93, he was in Jane's Addiction. 93 to 98, he was in Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yep.
2001 to 2005, you know, I don't know. Wasn't he on some show? He was like an American Idol guy.
He was on that rock star. Remember that rock star one?
Yeah.
He was on that. Or was that Dave Grohl? I get them so confused. I feel like
oh,
they even
shit.
Look alike.
They do look the same.
Yeah.
I think I get those two mixed up also.
All right, anyway, let's move on.
Marilyn Manson, Guns N' Roses, Nine Inch Nails, he played with all those guys. Anyway, fuck you guys for judging us for not knowing that.
Yes, because there will be people screaming at the...
You know, if I get one more
tweet... At their phone for that.
One more tweet about something we got wrong and that we should know better, these Star Trek assholes.
No, no, no. It's nice. We will definitely admit our ignorance, and it's nice to get gentle corrections.
If Matt Kalmbach... sends me one more message.
He doesn't listen, does he?
He did at the beginning. He listened to the first one, and he got pissed about us disparaging Kevin Costner.
And oh, that's right. Now he refuses.
I don't think he's
now.
Listened to since. If you don't know who Matt Kalmbach is, he is a Toledoan who I went to high school with, and he is covered in back hair.
He's got back hair all over his torso.
We all should feel bad for his shower drain.
Ooh.
Saturday, March 3rd, 1983.
That was the same one as I just did. Or is there another
You did
one?
Thursday, March 3rd.
Oh, I thought that's what you just said.
Saturday, March 5th.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. Saturday, March 5th, 1983. The new number one single from March 5th all the way to April 22nd is Michael Jackson's Billie Jean.
Billie Jean is not my lover. She's just a girl who thinks that I am the one. But the kid is not my son.
Jackson stated several times that Billie Jean was based on the groupies he and his brothers encountered while part of the Jackson 5. Billie Jean is kind of anonymous. Billie Jean is kind of anonymous. It represents a lot of girls. They used to call them groupies in the 60s, he added. They would hang around backstage doors, and any band that would come to town they would have a relationship with.
I know what groupies are.
He means
are,
bang.
Honey.
And I think I wrote this out of experiences with my brothers when I was little. Anyway, every girl claimed that their son was related to one of my brothers. But Jackson's biographer, J. Randy Taraborelli.
Make sure you're not talking too fast, remember?
Jackson's biographer, J. Randy Taraborelli,
promoted
the theory that Billie Jean was derived from a real-life experience the singer faced in 1981.
Like a stalker, maybe?
Yeah, the Magic and Madness documents documents how a young woman wrote Jackson a letter, which informed the singer that he was the father of one of her twins.
Oh, wow. And she was just a groupie?
She was the father of one of her twins.
Oh, I didn't catch that.
Yeah, which is impossible.
Yes, right.
And insane. Jackson, who regularly received letters of this kind, had never met the woman in question and ignored it.
Oh.
The woman, however, continued to send Jackson more letters, which stated that she loved him and wanted to be with him.
That's creepy.
She wrote of how happy they would be if they raised
so he writes a song about
the child together.
That's not going to help matters, to write a song about her.
Yeah.
I mean, then that just feeds their delusion. I listened to a podcast about Dave Letterman's stalker. Have you ever heard about that?
No.
And every time he would talk about the stalker on air, it exacerbated the situation
because he's talking about me.
Especially like stalkers of celebrities, they insert themselves, like they start to delude themselves into believing that they really are important in that person's life. And so every time he went on air and mentioned her, it made it worse.
Yeah.
But she like would stand, like when he was in his bed with his wife once,
yeah,
and she's standing in the hallway, like creepy. And she did it repeatedly for years.
Right. Yeah. That's crazy. It's a different world now.
Yeah.
Well, this is crazy because so he never met the woman and ignored it. The woman, however, continued to send Jackson more letters, which stated that she loved him and wanted to be with him. She wrote of how happy they'd be if they raised the child together. She pondered how Jackson could ignore his own flesh and blood. The letters disturbed the singer to the extent that he suffered nightmares.
Wow.
Following the letters, Jackson received a parcel containing a photograph of the fan, as well as a letter and a gun.
Whoa.
Jackson was horrified. The letter asked that the pop singer kill himself on a certain day and at a specific time. The fan would do the same once she had killed their baby. She wrote that if they could not be together in this life, then they would be in the next.
Whoa.
To the mother's dismay, Jackson had the photograph of the woman framed and hung above the dining room table of their family home.
What?
That's weird. Afterwards, the Jackson discovered that the fan had been sent to a psychiatric hospital. Now, this is all according to the biographer.
Yeah.
Michael Jackson never said that happened. He always said, no, it's not about anybody in particular.
Well, maybe he didn't want this person to know that it was about her.
But why would he frame her picture and put it above their table? Like, that's weird to me.
So he framed a picture of that picture she sent with
baby? That's what it says in this.
And put it.
According to this biographer.
That is weird.
Yeah, so that is weird.
Yeah.
Okay. So Friday, April 1st, 1983, the Pittsburgh Penguins purposefully... How about that?
That's alliteration.
The Pittsburgh Penguins purposefully finished last in the 1983-84 season to secure the 1984 draft pick of current owner and Hall of Famer Mario Lemieux.
So they what? They purposely lost?
Yeah, so I don't know if you know how sports work, but when you draft the players from college into the pros, so that's, this is hockey.
The worst team gets
the
first pick.
The worst team gets the top pick.
I got it now.
So the Browns have had, always pick first because they're always the worst team. So in hockey, apparently, and then everyone always accuses of teams of just tanking.
Yeah, so they're
just tanking to try to get the, but the Pits, this is the only time I've ever heard of this actually happening. So they purposefully did finish last, according to popculture.us. I didn't search this and say, are there allegations or whatever? But Mario Lemieux was one of the few hockey players that I've ever heard of.
Oh, okay.
And he's, I guess he owns the Penguins now. Like, he's that big of a deal.
Oh.
So he was a big deal.
Okay.
I guess. So, okay. There's only Wayne Gretzky, Mario Lemieux.
Yeah. Wayne Gretzky's the only one I know.
Pokey Redick. The only reason I know him, the only black hockey player,
Oh, really?
Ever for a long time. That's the only reason I know him. Monday, April 11th, 1983, the Oscars were hosted by Liza Minnelli, Dudley Moore, Richard Pryor, and Walter Matthau.
Wow, that's a lot of hosts.
Yeah, I don't know why they had four hosts.
Hmm.
They probably figured none of them could do it on their own.
They're probably all old and...
And Gandhi won everything.
Oh, it did.
11 nominations, 8 awards, Best Picture, all that jazz.
Never seen it.
You never saw Gandhi?
No,
I didn't either.
Never watched it. Look, it's long. It's really long. It's 3 hours long.
Yeah, you have to set aside a long time.
And I just don't have the patience for that.
Who's got time?
Ain't nobody got time for that.
You should be able to speed up movies like you can podcasts.
Yeah, that's right.
And watch them in faster motion. Tuesday, April 12th, 1983, on television, Dennis Haysbert plays a psych ward staff member on an A-Team episode.
Oh.
One More Time is the name of the episode.
Are we going to just, is it going to be the A-Team? Like, are we going to have to listen to 85 episodes of the A-Team?
Every episode from now on, I'm going to find who guest hosted on A-Team.
Anyway, come on.
Dennis Haysbert was on an A-Team episode.
All right.
And he just played a psych ward staff member. Dennis Haysbert wasn't a big deal back then. He was just Not like now, where Dennis Haysbert is the reason anybody A-star. Gives up. Dennis Haysbert, yo!
All right.
Dennis Haysbert! It's like everything's featuring Dennis Haysbert.
That's
it's
right.
Like Kanye West featuring Dennis Haysbert.
Okay.
The Wu-Tang Clan, the Ghostface Killer, the RZA, the Jizza, the Old Dilly Bastard, and Dennis Haysbert!
Okay.
Wednesday, April 13th, 1983.
Oh. April 13th, 1983, the town of Thistle, Utah was destroyed by a landslide and the resulting flood.
The whole town?
The whole town. The disaster was the costliest landslide in United States history.
Oh.
So it's a ghost town now.
It is?
Yeah, it's a total ghost town.
All because of this landslide?
Mm-hmm.
Boom.
Its primary industry was servicing trains for the Denver and Rio Grande Western Railroad.
Oh.
So the fortunes of the whole town were linked with the railroad.
The fortunes, you mean? The fortunes.
So in April 1983, a massive landslide dammed the Spanish Fork River. The residents were evacuated as nearly 65,000 acre feet of water backed up, flooding the town. Thistle was destroyed. Only a few structures were left partially standing. Federal and state government agencies have said this was the most costly landslide in United States history, the economic consequences of which affected the entire region. The landslide resulted in the first presidentially declared disaster area.
Really?
Yes.
That's the first time?
First time they did that.
President Reagan did that.
Yes.
Wow. He did a lot of firsts, huh?
Yep. He was my first.
Wait, what?
Nothing.
You banged at Ronald Reagan? Holy cow.
I don't know.
You probably did.
I think I did.
You seem like somebody who would have.
Yes.
Friday, April 15th, 1983.
Yes.
There was a movie.
What was it?
A movie came out called Flashdance.
Oh, I loved that movie.
You did,
what
really?
A feeling.
I'm glad somebody did.
I
did
loved
not.
It. With the dancing and all that.
I didn't know the
we
difference between
it.
Flashdance and Fame.
Yeah, they were very similar, but Flashdance was Jennifer Beals.
Jennifer Beals. Oh, do you know this? Here's a little tidbit I have on Flashdance that you probably don't know.
Okay.
Remember that sweater?
Yes, the big giant sweater.
There's a special thing about her sweater, right? Like her shoulder
fell
out
of
it.
She took her bra off underneath it.
She could?
Yeah.
Well, the trend-setting collarless sweatshirt. It was a sweatshirt.
Oh, yeah. It was a sweatshirt that came. They didn't have a collar, so it was like off one shoulder.
Yeah, collarless sweatshirt.
Yes.
That was trend-setting from that movie.
Okay,
right?
Yeah.
Like, girls wanted that.
They ended up wanting it in leg warmers.
Yeah. Well, that sweatshirt came about by accident.
Oh.
The sweatshirt which Beals brought from home had shrunk in the wash, and she had to cut the collar off in order to get it over her head.
Oh. Yeah, it was a big trend.
I don't know if that's true, though.
What?
Because it was pretty baggy. Like, if you had to cut it off, she probably needed to cut it off to get over her head without mussing her hair.
That's right.
Because her hair was probably big. Wasn't it big 80s hair?
Yeah, it was huge.
Yeah, so
that's probably what it is.
In. Anyway, I never once saw that, and I have absolutely zero desire to ever see that.
We're watching it tonight.
Although I have, on more than one wedding, performed a complete dance number
to.
Is it this or Maniac?
They're both from the movie Flashdance.
Flashdance for love.
No,
Allie sings it. And
what
then
a feeling
I do
is
the
Flashdance
dance.
Theme song.
Oh, what a feel. That's the song. And I do the whole dance. I do even the chair. I get up on the chair thing and I do the chair.
Yeah.
And I do that while Allie sings karaoke.
That's
every
right.
time Allie sings that. And Allie is the wife of Armand Crisp. Saturday, April 23rd, 1983, a new number one hit on the Billboard charts, Dixie's Midnight Runners.
Come on, Eileen. Oh, I swear on Eileen. At this moment,
you mean everything.
The shirtless overalls were born.
Lura, lura, yeah, my brothers and I just loved his armpit hair. We just laughed because he put his hands over
his head. I know. I remember
that
too.
All that gross armpit hair.
That's right.
So, although often believed to have been inspired by a childhood friend with whom Kevin Rowland had a romantic and later sexual relationship in his teens, there was actually no real Eileen.
Oh, bummer.
In fact, she was composite to make a point about Catholic repression.
Oh.
The character of Eileen in the music video, though, as well as on the single cover, is played by Mairéad Fahey. sister of Siobhan Fahey from Bananarama.
Oh, okay.
She looks like a Bananarama member, yes, doesn't she?
Yes, a little bit, yeah.
I will confess this. When I was a child, I had a crush on Eileen from that video.
You did?
And then I wanted to see that guy's armpit
hair.
That armpit hair. Yep. And did you know that Dexys Midnight Runners does not have an apostrophe between the Y and the S in Dexys?
Okay.
It's just D-X-Y-S.
Okay. Why? Who cares?
You don't care about that?
No. That's stupid.
This is the crux of the problem in our relationship. I care about that.
You care about that.
And you don't care about that. So
that's right.
It's like Pepsi and Coke.
It is.
Are you a Coke family or a Pepsi family? You can't be one or the other. You either care about the apostrophe in Dexys Midnight Runners or you don't.
That's right.
And you don't and I do and I don't know if we can get past it.
All right, let's move on.
Wednesday, April 27th, 1983. I've put this in a new category called Holy Shit.
Oh, yeah?
We'll see if you're as excited about this as I am. This is a kind of a story. Cliff Young was a 61-year-old potato farmer.
Mm-hmm.
He won a 544-mile endurance race against many younger professional athletes. The 61-year-old potato farmer won the inaugural Westfield Sydney to Melbourne Ultramarathon, a distance of 875 kilometers, which is 544 miles.
Jeez.
Running.
What?
So this, to me, just even doing that ever
yes.
blows my mind. So the race was run between what were then Australia's two largest Westfield shopping centers.
Jeez.
Westfield, Parramatta, and Sydney.
Why would you want to run that long?
So Cliff Young showed up to compete. This is great. He's a potato farmer. He showed up to compete in this long, 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 long run in overalls and work boots.
Oh, my God.
Without his dentures.
Oh, my God.
Later claiming that they rattled when he ran. He ran at a slow, loping pace. And he trailed the pack by a large margin at the end of the first day. But while the other competitors stopped to sleep for 6 hours.
Yeah.
Because it's 544 miles.
Right.
Cliff Young kept running.
Oh, my God.
He ran continuously for 5 days.
How can you? What?
Taking the lead during the first night and eventually winning by 10 hours.
What?
Before running the race, he had told the press that he had previously run for 2 or 3 days straight, rounding up sheep in gumboots.
Oh, my God.
He claimed afterward that during the race, he imagined that he was running after sheep.
He's like Forrest
trying
Gump.
Trying to outrun a storm.
He's totally Forrest Gump.
He is. The Westfield run took him 5 days, 15 hours, and 4 minutes.
Oh, my God.
Almost 2 days faster than the previous record for any run between Sydney and Melbourne. All six competitors who finished the race broke the previous record. Here's the greatest thing. Upon being awarded the prize of $10,000.
Yeah.
Young said he didn't know that there was a prize.
What? No.
And he felt bad accepting it.
Oh, my God.
As each of the other five runners who finished had worked as hard as he did. So he split the money equally between them.
Oh, bless.
And he kept none of it. He gave all the money to the other competitors.
What?
Isn't that insane?
Why did he do it? Just he wanted to?
He's won a race. He's won a run.
Oh, my
he's
God. He's a potato that's farmer. That's hysterical.
He's wearing work boots. And he just ran while everyone else was sleeping. That's insane.
It is. That's crazy.
Holy shit.
That is a crazy story.
It's not American. So it's in Australia, obviously.
But you got to do it.
I think Australians are fucking crazy.
Yes.
I mean, this is our Australian episode. We got Who Can It?
Yeah, we do. Men at Work.
Down From Under, Down Under, Men at Work, and then this. That's nuts.
I know.
Yeah, so... what a fucking nut.
My God. Yeah. I can't believe that.
Yeah. Don't you wish you would have married a guy like that?
Yeah.
He gave all the money. I didn't know there was money. Saturday, April 30th, 1983, a new number one single took over the Billboard charts.
Yes.
And stayed there until May 20th. Another Michael Jackson hit. Do you know which one? Off the Thriller album.
Oh,
yep,
no.
Beat It.
Beat It, okay.
Yep. Billie Jean, Beat It, Thriller.
That's right.
Say, The Girl Is Mine. Yeah. And there's another one off their PYT, I think. Something. I mean, there's so many good songs.
Yeah.
Beat It became number one. And I did not know this. I feel like maybe I knew it at one point, I forgot. But do you know who plays the guitar solo on Beat It? You know that big guitar riff?
Is it Bruce Springsteen guy?
Steven Van Zandt?
Yeah, is it him?
No.
Oh, who is it?
It's Eddie Van Halen.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And he didn't get paid for it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So he was asked to do a guitar solo. When initially contacted by Quincy Jones, Van Halen thought he was receiving a prank call. And later he figured out it was a real call. He borrowed an amplifier from guitarist Alan Holdsworth and recorded his guitar solo free of any charge.
Wow.
I did it as a favor, the musician later said. Van Halen recorded his contribution following Jones and Jackson arriving at the guitarist's house with a skeleton version of the song.
It's pretty good guitar solo.
It's pretty good. It's, yeah. You know, it's pretty info. I mean, everybody knows it.
Especially picturing him just making it up at the spot like that.
Yeah, he's played it.
It's pretty good.
Even before, but Eddie Van Halen.
Yeah, he's unbelievable. He was shred.
He would always just tear. I mean, he was an amazing.
Yes, he was.
Amazing guy. Matt Ruck, who was probably the greatest guitarist I've ever personally known.
Yeah.
Like, Eddie Van Halen was his
idol.
His idol. He loved him. Saturday, May 7th, 1983, the Kentucky Derby. The winner's name was...
I thought you weren't going to do this anymore to me.
You know, that's obviously what the winner was. It was 1983,
I thought you weren't going to do this to me anymore.
Well, it was only the second Canadian-bred horse to win the Kentucky Derby, so everybody knows it was... Just say it.
Fuck you.
It was not fuck you. It was actually the second Canadian-bred horse to win the Kentucky Derby was Sonny's Halo.
Okay, that was well worth waiting for.
Sonny's Halo. That's your favorite horse. Mm-hmm. Amy has several horse sweatshirts.
No, I don't.
With horses on it. She's a horse fan, a big horse fan.
No, that's not true.
Tuesday, May 10th, 1983, the A-Team had another guest star.
Are you kidding me? Are you fucking kidding me?
Joanna Kearns guested on the A-Team.
Really?
You know who Joanna Kearns is?
Yeah, she's from Growing Pains. Right?
I think so. There's Who's the Boss?
No, she was on Growing Pains. Judith Light was on
Judith
Who's the
Light.
Boss.
I get those two mixed up.
Yeah.
Joanna Kearns was on the A-Team, y'all.
All right, what's next?
And, a lot of people...
It doesn't even matter. Who cares about Joanna Kearns?
I mean, the Joanna Kearns fan club surely cares. And they're all like, oh, man, if she wasn't on the A-Team, she would have never been on Growing Pains. And there would have never been a Growing Pains.
All right, let's go.
Without
let's
Joanna
move on.
Motherfucking Kearns, y'all. Friday, May 13th, 1983.
Yes, a preserved head was discovered at a bog in Lindo Moss.
Gross.
Believing the remains to be his former wife, this man, Peter Rain Bart, confessed to murdering her in 1960.
Ew.
So he thought that the head was her, and he was like, oh.
He thought they found it.
I guess I'll just confess.
I better give it up.
So when testing later found the head was from 250 A.D., Rain Bart tried to revoke his confession, but was still convicted of her murder.
Just kidding. I didn't kill her. That's an ancient
head?
And
this was in England.
Just kidding. It was an ancient head they found?
Yeah, from 250 A.D.
I figured it was in England because you said bog.
Yeah.
Or Australia. Or
Lindell Moss. The skull had been preserved in the peat bog for over 16 centuries and obviously has nothing to do with Malika Rain Bart, which was the name of his wife.
My name's Malika.
But the supreme irony is its discovery led directly to the arrest of the defendant and to his detailed confession.
What a dumbass.
Despite the apparent confession, Rain Bart pleaded innocent to strangling Malika, to whom he proposed 2 hours after they met, and he married 4 days later in 1959.
Kind of sounds like
no trace of her body has ever been found. In his alleged confession, Rain Bart said he strangled his wife and hacked up her body when she threatened to expose my homosexuality, blackmail me, and disgrace me. Dismembering her body, he allegedly said, was a terrible mess. I was covered in blood.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I wonder how many gay dudes had to murder their wives because
they were worried about it.
Well, more power to him.
That's right.
Right?
Damn it.
I mean, he's gay, so let him be. Let him murder whoever he wants.
All right, what's next?
Sunday, May 15th, just 2 days after that whole horrible thing.
Yep.
Michael Jackson's first live televised performance of Billie Jean.
Solid Gold?
Came on the television special Motown 25.
Oh, okay.
Yesterday. Today. Forever. So... This is the big deal. This was when the moonwalk was born.
Oh, I think I've seen this video.
So, I made my kids watch it. I thought it was the Grammys. I always thought it was the Grammys growing up. I was little. I remember exactly where I was. I made the kids watch it because I told them this changed the world for everyone. Michael Jackson became a superstar.
Yes.
It changed music. It changed pop. It changed everything. And this was a new thing. And I always thought it was the Grammys, but this is when it happened. Sunday, May 15th, and it was actually recorded on March 20-something, 25th.
But they played it.
But it was on TV on Sunday, May 15th. I remember exactly where I was. I was in my parents' bedroom because it was hot, and they had an air conditioner in their room. So the performance is considered a watershed moment, not only in Jackson's career, but in the history of pop culture. It was intended to be a celebration of Motown Records' 25th anniversary. The event featured many of the most popular Motown acts, past and present. Jackson initially refused an invitation to reunite with his brothers for a performance, but reconsidered. Jackson asked to also perform Billie Jean. Following performances by Marvin Gaye, Smokey Robinson, and Mary Wells, the Jacksons took the stage to sing a medley of their early 70s hits. Jermaine Jackson was on stage with the group, marking the first time that the original Jackson 5 lineup had performed together since they left Motown in 75. Michael Jackson wore black pants, leather penny loafers, a black sequin jacket, a single white rhinestone glove.
Yes.
This is where the glove came from. After the group finished with I'll Be There, they left Michael alone on stage. He addressed the audience, and then Billie Jean started playing.
And then the crazy dancing started.
Jackson lip-synced the entire song because organizers feared that the evening's backing band could not replicate the sound of the recording. To begin his performance, Jackson snapped a fedora to his head and struck a pose. His right hand...
I know exactly what pose.
Yep. His right hand on his hat and his left leg bent.
Yep.
During an instrumental interlude... The singer executed a move that many believe sealed his status as a pop icon.
Yes.
Jackson glided backwards to perform the moonwalk.
Cool.
Before he spun on his heels and landed in point. Yep. It was the first time Jackson had performed the moonwalk in public. He had practiced it in his kitchen prior to the show.
I remember it was in craze. And the moonwalk was the craze.
The crowd went crazy when he did that. It was like... How is he doing? I remember my whole family was like, how is he doing? How did he just do that?
Yeah, everybody had to learn it.
How was he even doing it? Can you even? And we all tried to do it. We went to the kitchen and tried to do it. And it was, how do you do it?
Yep.
And because he did it effortlessly. It was amazing.
The way he did it. Part of it was his shoes probably too. They were slick or something.
Who knows? But anyway, Michael Jackson was unbelievable. Like, he was just an unbelievable thing. So that was a huge moment. Tuesday, May 17th, 1983. The New York Islanders beat the Edmonton Oilers 4-0, and Billy Smith was the MVP. It was hockey.
Who cares?
Don't you love hockey?
No.
You don't love hockey?
No.
Hockey?
Nope.
Should I tell my hockey story about taking Gary O to hockey games?
No.
No?
Yeah, go ahead.
So I used to work with people with developmental disabilities, and there was this fella who loved hockey, and... He was just a real short guy with Down syndrome, and he would say, hockey, hockey. He would whisper. He would never talk. He would just whisper, hockey. And then people who knew him well told me, he wants you to take him to a hockey game. He loves hockey.
Fun.
And so I was like, okay, I'll sign up to take him to a game, you know. So I was going to take him to a game. It was way down the road, a couple, weeks down the road. Every time I saw him, he was like, hockey, hockey. I was like, okay, all right, we're going to go. Yeah, I know, you love hockey. That's great. I can't wait to take you to this game. It'll be great. Hockey, hockey. And then he would start saying, I like you. And
I like you.
I like you. And I was like, great, I like you too. I'm going to take you to a hockey game. And I couldn't wait. I started getting pumped for this hockey game. Because I'm like, what is this going to be like? This guy loves hockey so much. So we get to the hockey game. It was a Toledo Storm game at the time. The Toledo Walleye weren't a thing yet. And I take him to the hockey game. And not one time, not once does he even look at the game.
Well,
He gets popcorn, and he gets some soda, and he gets some candy, and he just loves it. He's like, his eyes are closed, and he's just smiling, and so he's happy.
Yeah.
But I'm like, aren't you going to watch the hockey game?
Nope.
All you've talked to me
it's the ritual.
3 weeks is the hockey. Yeah. Hockey, and he didn't give a shit about the game.
That's great.
Was just probably something to remind him of his family, because they all loved hockey, I think.
But yeah.
That was a funny, fun thing. Hockey.
Yep.
The only thing about hockey that... It was worth anything besides the fighting, the bludgeoning faces. Saturday, May 21st, 1983, David Bowie, Let's Dance.
Put on your red shoes and dance the blues.
Let's Dance. Now, here's another guitar solo guess. There's a guitar solo in that song.
There is.
Played by a famous guitarist. Who do you think it is?
I don't know.
It rhymes with Fleavy Pay Pawn.
Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Right. Stevie Ray Vaughan played the guitar solo at the end of that song. Let's Dance. Wednesday, May 25th, 1983.
Yeah.
Return of the Jedi came out.
Oh, yeah.
Return of the Jedi came out to the theaters.
That was a big deal.
And this was a great movie, and I remembered it. I remember it a lot. This is the movie I remember the most as a kid.
Yeah.
Because at this point, I was 7 or 8. At this point, I loved Star Wars.
Yeah.
I mean, everything was Star Wars. We had the Millennium Falcon and the X-Wing fighter and all the figures. And
yes.
You know. this is where Jabba the Hutt shows up.
Oh, yeah.
Ewoks and all that.
It was huge.
It was a big, big deal. I mean,
big deal.
So much
all the
money.
Toys that came out of it.
So many toys. But in Return of the Jedi, here's a little tip for the nerds.
Mm-hmm.
Carrie Fisher, I mean, they all know this already. Carrie Fisher complained about her costumes in the previous two movies. She said they were so long,
yeah.
You couldn't even tell she was a woman.
So then they put her in that bikini.
Yeah, those complaints led to the skimpy outfit she wore as Jabba's slave. The costume became something of a running joke among the crew because the metal framework that held the top together meant that the costume didn't move well with her, since Fisher didn't like the industry standard solution of using double-sided tape. It became necessary before each take to have a wardrobe person check to ensure that her breasts
and her nipples weren't hanging
out. Were still snug inside the costume top.
Yep.
And several scenes had to be reshot when wardrobe malfunctions occurred.
Oh, wow.
Saturday, May 28th, 1983, a new number one song on the Billboard charts.
What is it?
Irene Cara.
Flashdance, What a Feeling?
Flashdance.
That's right.
Oh, What a Feeling.
That's right. I am going to cover the IHOP Killers.
The IHOP Killers?
Yes.
That's recent. That's this year.
No, this
well, that's
is...
Waffle House.
Yeah. So, Dee Castile was a 44-year-old waitress and alcoholic.
Sounds hot.
She was the waitress at the IHOP in Naranjua, Florida, I think.
Naranja?
She was married with three children, and her marriage was very troubled. She was led into a plot that ended in murder.
You know, it's funny, because that's what I've always been looking for in a woman. I've always been looking for an IHOP waitress and a troubled marriage with three kids who's an alcoholic.
That's right. So on May 29th, she was working at the IHOP. So around 2 p.m., James Allen Bryant pulls in. Now, he was the lover of the owner of the IHOP, whose name was Art Balencia. So he has had a huge crush on Allen.
The owner.
The one who's pulling up.
Oh, the guy who's pulling up.
Art is the name of the owner.
Okay, so she's got a crush on him, even though he's a gay man.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Allen had been with Art for 8 years.
Okay.
He was a very small, effeminate guy.
Oh, which...
Which was very...
Why wouldn't you have a crush on him?
Well, it was very opposite what she normally... The marriages and stuff she's had, they were beefy, like...
Big, beefy, fat
wife-beating
guy,
type guys.
Assholes.
Yeah. So Art, the owner of the IHOP, was a successful businessman and had bought the IHOP for Allen to manage it, to kind of keep him busy.
Okay.
Their relationship was troubled as well. Dee had been at the IHOP for 9 months. And every other job she'd been fired for drinking on the job. She would go through 2 to 3 bottles of scotch a day.
Sounds familiar.
She was real afraid she's going to be fired again. And
had been
drinking all day when Allen pulls up.
Poor gal.
So she comes out of the ladies' room, and Allen's taking cash out of the register. He was robbing Art and cheating on him.
Okay. Art's the owner and Allen's pulled up?
Yeah. Allen's the one who's getting the money out of the cash register.
And Art bought it for Allen to run.
To manage it, yes. So he's the manager.
So Allen's the manager.
Yes, and he's robbing the
and
place.
And he's robbing it.
Yes.
And she knows this?
She sees him doing it, yeah.
And she's got a crush on him.
Yes.
Right.
Allen was now in love with a man from Cuba.
Oh, another man.
So he notices this oregano bottle next to the register with scotch in it, and he sniffs it, but then he leaves without saying anything. And so
he's
she's like,
reporter. He's not going to report her because he's actively robbing the restaurant.
That's right, yes.
That night on television, while everything else that night, because it's getting towards summer,
mm-hmm.
everything's reruns except for Alice.
Oh.
And on that episode of Alice, which I would assume a lot of people are going to tune in, because
yeah.
it's the one show that's not a rerun,
yeah.
Mel has his cousin get a job at a competitor's restaurant to get their secret sauce recipe.
Oh, well, you know.
So that would hit home.
That would. So 2 days later, which is Tuesday, May 31st.
Yeah. Oh, which is the same night that the Eastern Conference champion Philadelphia 76ers defeated the Western Conference champion Los Angeles Lakers 4-0. Center Moses Malone was named the NBA Finals MVP.
Okay.
There was reruns on TV that night of The A-Team, Happy Days, Joni Loves Chachi, Three's Company, 9 to 5, and Heart to Heart.
Okay.
3 days later on Tuesday, May 31st.
Yes, Tuesday, May 31st. So Allen called Dee at home and told her to come in because he wanted to talk to her.
You know, Dee, I got to talk to you.
So
she's probably worried.
He is very worried.
She's
worried
alcohol.
She's going to get fired, yes. So Allen wants her to go for a ride with him.
Oh.
He tells her he knew about the whiskey in the bottle, but he said not,
blackmail.
He said not to worry about it, that people like them needed to stick together. He said he wouldn't tell.
People like us need to stick together.
Yep. He bitched about Art and said he needed to get free of him.
Art's a dick.
He told her he heard she knew of someone who would take a contract on somebody.
She said she knew?
He told her that he heard she knew it.
Oh, he told her, I heard you know
somebody. And she thought he was talking about her husband's friend, Mike, who always joked about it. He'd always say, I'll rub out your husband for you if you, you know, he'd flirt with her and stuff and say that. So that's what she thought. But Mike.
Maybe Mike would do it.
But he was always just joking. And so she was worried, though, that she's letting Alan down. So she says, well, Mike might know someone.
Well, I can talk to Mike about it.
And so right then the plot gets hatched to kill Art.
That is a plot.
Yes.
The plot is thickening.
And that's where we'll pick up next week in part two of 1983.
You mean this is a cliffhanger?
Yep, it's going to have to be a two-parter.
To be continued.
All right, we got to get out of here, Chuck Berry.
Get the hell out of here, Chuck Berry. See you next week.